भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Reading this morning from Canto 3, Chapter 5, Text Number 48. That's got to be shut off. The breeze is nice, but the noise is not worth the trade-off. Chapter 5 of Canto 3, Srimad Bhagavatam is entitled Vidura's Talks with Maitreya. Who is Vidura? Do you know who is Vidura? Do you know who is Vidura? Who is Vidura? A little louder? Dhritarashtra's brother. What else can you say about him? That's correct. What else can you say? Vidura. He had another brother too. Vidura had a second brother, Pandu. So there were three brothers. And the youngest of the three brothers was Vidura. We know from First Canto Srimad Bhagavatam that Vidura was insulted by Duryodhan, and he left the royal assembly prior to the Kurukshetra battle. So that means while the Kurukshetra battle was going on, Vidura was on pilgrimage. In the beginning of the third canto Bhagavatam, that portion of Vidura's life is amplified when he was on pilgrimage, where he went, because the sages of Namisharanya, they ask two cantos later, they ask, you said Vidura was on pilgrimage. Can you tell us where he went on pilgrimage? And you mentioned that he met Maitreya. Oh, that must have been really fantastic, because Vidura's way up there. He's so vastly learned. And he learned from Maitreya? Can you describe the conversations between those two? Must have been a wonderful exchange. Please describe. So before meeting Maitreya, he met Uddhava. Because Uddhava had just received Uddhava Gita just before Krishna's departure. Just before Krishna's departure, he spoke to Uddhava. And in the audience, or it's in the forest, but hearing this description was Maitreya. So Maitreya received that full mercy directly from Krishna. And just after Krishna left, is when Vidura also came to that same remote place in the forest and saw Uddhava. And as soon as he saw Uddhava, who did he think of? Krishna. Because Uddhava was residing in Dwarka as a minister of Krishna. The dearmost, outside of Vrindavan, the dearmost associate of Krishna. We can say Arjuna was his dearmost friend, but Uddhava was his, in another sense, most confidential associate. Most intimate confidential associate. And there he is in the forest. Uddhava, what are you doing in the forest? But now that I see you, can you tell me all about the Yadu dynasty members? And he lists them all, and how is everybody doing? And Uddhava says, they've all gone. And Krishna has gone, and it's two chapters of describing Krishna. His pastimes in sequence, his pastimes in Vrindavan, and then in turns his pastimes out of Vrindavan. Which, as you may know, is what the two books, Vidagdha Madhava and Lita Madhava, are, that Rupa Goswami composed, following the mood of Uddhava, talking about Krishna in Vrindavan and out of Vrindavan. Very beautiful composition. And it's now translated into English by our very qualified Sanskrit scholars. I haven't read the whole thing, but it's just that the parts that I've read, it's typically Rupa Goswami. It's just beautiful literature. So here it is in the Bhagavatam, Uddhava just recounting the pastimes of Krishna, little cameo pictures of Krishna's pastimes in sequence. Like the gopis can't stop thinking of Krishna, Uddhava can't stop thinking of Krishna. And they speak all night long. And in the morning, Uddhava says, I have to go now. Krishna gave me some service. That during the day, Krishna had left. It's the next day. Uddhava left. But Uddhava said, you go to Maitreya. He also heard, and he's my senior by years, and he'll satisfy all of your questions. And you know what? Just before Krishna left this planet, he spoke of you. He said that Vidura will come very soon. Maitreya, you should instruct him about this conversation that I've just had. Vidura felt so blessed that Krishna, just before leaving, thought of him. But he also felt devastation. Krishna's gone. It happens like that sometimes in devotional service. There are these very contradictory emotions that are playing at once in the heart. So Vidura went to Maitreya and began asking many questions. And of course he wanted to hear about Krishna. But he specifically asked Maitreya to explain the process of creation, how the Lord, through his expansions and his potencies, brings about the cosmic manifestation. And it wasn't a technology question. It was a, you know, seeking his realization of the Lord and how he does. So some of the technical things are presented by Maitreya, but then the part that we're reading from is where the demigods, it's Lord Vishnu did his part, Sarga, then there's Lord Brahma, who's doing Lord Brahma's part, Visarga, the sub-creation. And part of what Brahma does is he manifests the various controlling personalities of the universe. And those controlling personalities felt, like we often feel, incapable of doing the service that's entrusted. So they offered very beautiful prayers, which is part of how the Lord does it, how the Lord affects creation. Because the living entities that are empowered by him, truly empowered souls feel themselves very dependent, totally dependent upon the mercy of the Lord. And so they're appealing to the Lord's mercy. In very beautiful prayers, describing the Lord, describing the process of creation, describing their service in that maintenance of the creation. And the verse that we're going to read this morning is just one with a short purport, but it's has a lot of meaning. Text 48, demigods praying to the personality of Godhead. Oh, original person, we are therefore but yours only. Although we are your creatures, we are born one after another under the influence of the three modes of nature. And for this reason, we are separate in action. Therefore, after the creation, we could not act concertedly for your transcendental pleasure. 4-sentence purport. The cosmic creation is working under the influence of the three modes of the external potency of the Lord. Different creatures are also under the same influence, and therefore they cannot act concertedly in satisfying the Lord. Because of this diverse activity, there cannot be any harmony in the material world. The best policy, therefore, is to act for the sake of the Lord. That will bring about the desired harmony. And a purport. So I'm going to spend some time speaking about unity in diversity, or unity and diversity. Either way, unity in diversity, unity and diversity. There's a very famous letter that Srila Prabhupada wrote, I think it was to Kurandar, where he was expressing this unity in diversity principle, and he was saying something to the effect that my disciples, even in my presence, you're already quarreling, what's going to happen after I'm gone? Can you not apply yourselves, or he instructed them to apply themselves in this principle of unity in diversity, respecting diversity is respecting differences. Unity is working together. In different places, Srila Prabhupada speaks of the diversity specifically in terms of the Lord's potencies. Here it's specifically in terms of the modes of nature, because the modes of nature create diversity. We find diversity. We find different forms, we find different personalities, we find different traits, different qualities. We find diversity in this material world. But that diversity is without harmony, and so it's disruptive. But in the spiritual world, there's diversity with unity. So what's the difference between the material world and the spiritual world? You say the difference, one is unity and the other isn't. But what makes that unity? The unity is everything is for the Supreme. Although there's diversity, everything is for the Supreme. The very first lecture that I heard Srila Prabhupada speak was on this point. And he did it in a very beautiful way. He motioned with his hand like this, saying, imagine there's a pond of water, and we'll give everybody in the assembly here a little stone. And what happens when you take that little stone and place the stone in the water? Very nice. little splash, and concentric circles expand, and it's very nice. But then another person puts his stone in the water, and similar concentric circles expand until those concentric circles hit one another, and then there's clash or conflict. And then everyone all at once can place their pebbles or little stone in the pond, and it's chaos. And that's the material world. Because we're all invested in our individuality, in our diversity, but no unity. Then he explained the principle of unity and diversity is if there's one place and everyone places their pebble or small stone in the same place, their individuality is preserved, but those concentric circles are amplified. Very simple. Very simple. I've even made a PowerPoint out of it. It was requested December of last year to speak at the Detroit Temple. There was some traveling somebody from Sri Lanka who has his own spiritual organization, thousands of followers, and a Gandhian Buddhist fellow that's, picking people up by the bootstraps, because there's all very, very intense political diversity or conflict in Sri Lanka. So he just goes to the villages, stays away from the political controversy, and works with village people to do Gandhian type of things where they have indigenous little enterprise. What do they call those things? Cottage industry. So weaving, and somebody makes bricks, and somebody builds houses, and somebody helps with the roads, and somebody plants the trees, and then they have projects, and they all come together and put up somebody's house. They don't have to pay for anything, they just cooperatively help. And it's planting time, and it's harvest time, and it's this time, and teaches them cooperation. That the Gandhian part is the cottage industry part, and the Buddhism is, it's all one part. Anyway, so I was invited to speak along with this person at an event. And I used this same example and showed some images where there's one and then there's two. And then the concentric circles clash. What to speak of unlimited diversity, it's very chaotic. So the unity principle looks very attractive, but when you have it, because it brings everybody together, let's have unity. But you can have unity to the exclusion of diversity, and that's stifling, because in reality we're individual. You get impersonalism that just says unity and no diversity. You're individuality is finished. So that's not real. It's not natural. It's not what the reality of the situation is. During our GBC meeting that we just took part in Juhu, we dedicated about 2 hours to this topic, and it's so important that we're going to dedicate probably half a day to it when we get together again in Mayapur. The presenter was explaining this unity and diversity principle from a sociological perspective or a group dynamic perspective. So let's just say that from some group of devotees somewhere, we want unity. We want unity so strongly that if you step outside of this boundary, you're out. And, you know, to some extent that's required. Where we were speaking about affiliates. There's ISKCON and there's persons who affiliate themselves with ISKCON, or groups that are like appreciate. Like, let's say, in Vrindavan, there's a Food for Life program. Maybe you know about that. Vrindavan Food for Life. They do the Sandipani Muni School. Very nice school in Vrindavan for the Brijvasi kids. And they do beautification of the parks on the Prakrama Marg. They planted trees and they hire somebody to clean up all the rubbish on the inner Prakrama Marg. And they have nice programs for the widows and feeding widows and providing medicine and blankets and different, you know, nice things for the Brijvasis in Vrindavan. They made fresh water, call it well, a pump that provides fresh water instead of the salt water that commonly comes from the ground in Vrindavan, just for the people in Yavat, the place of Radharani's residence. So they do very nice work, but it's not under the GBC, it's not part of ISKCON, it's affiliated with ISKCON. So now, where do those kinds of things fit in a society, sangha of devotees? So you don't have to worry about that, you're just having a nice time here. And but some persons have to think about those things, the GBC has to think about those things. Or, you know, in a smaller group, so there's a principle of who you include, but also who you exclude. Because you want the group's sanctity to be protected by excluding certain mentalities. And so, you know, we don't want you to come if you're going to behave this way, or teach this way, or act this way. But we'd like you to be included. So every group dynamic has some kind of inclusive exclusive. So unity. So where does the line go? How much diversity do you allow as far as your group dynamic is concerned? And how much unity do you demand? And what are the principles for determining those things? So it's one thing, you just on your own, you just chant Hare Krishna and Hare Bol. But then when you have another person or a group of other persons, these kinds of considerations will naturally arise. You may not like articulate them precisely that way, but Srila Prabhupada, as our founder Acharya, was considering, there's diversity. In one place he was saying, my disciples come from all over the world, but they all work cooperatively together because they're all working for Krishna. That's the diversity and unity working nicely. But he also said, you know, you're fighting. That fighting is the modes of nature. And that's what the demigods are saying here. I'll read the verse again. O original person, we are therefore but yours only. That's the unity principle. Although we are your creatures, here's the diversity, we are born one after another under the influence of the three modes of nature, and for this reason we are separated in action. Therefore, after the creation, we could not act concertedly for your transcendental pleasure. So, how is it that there are varieties in this world? The answer is there's modes of nature. And as the modes of nature mix, Prabhupada does this magical mathematical thing 3 times 3 is 9, 9 times 9 is 81, and in this way we get 8,400,000 species. Just, you know, mixing and mixing and mixing and mixing and mixing. That actually could be unlimited, but 8,400,000 species. And within those species, there's also variety. So much variety. Why is there that this variety? How has it come about? It's the modes of nature. So when you have variety, and you don't have Krishna consciousness, you have chaos. You just have variety. So for conditioned souls to come to unity in diversity, then Krishna consciousness is necessary to have that unity while still respecting and preserving diversity or individuality. Once Srila Prabhupada was in Berkeley, California, western part of the United States, and Yogi Bhajan was also in California. So Yogi Bhajan came to meet Srila Prabhupada. I saw the video of the thing. He was moving his hand in the air at Yogi Bhajan. Let's call everyone together and love one another. And Prabhupada interrupted him and said, they will never. Now his wish was, you know, you're a strong leader, you have many followers, I have many followers. People of this world will listen to our words. Let us get together and bring others together and bring peace and harmony. And Prabhupada just interrupted him and said, they will never. Because, meaning, without accepting of Krishna, without accepting of the principle of unity, you're not going to have unity. Or the He who is the source of everything. And that's what the demigods are saying. Constitutionally, we're from you. We're nothing but yours. We are yours. That's the unity principle. But the modes of nature are acting. And so we're not able to work cooperatively with one another. Different creatures are under the influence of the modes of nature, and therefore they cannot act concertedly in satisfying the Lord. Because of this diverse activity, there cannot be any harmony in the material world. So I guess we just shrug our shoulders and say, I guess that's the way it is. It's just chaos. Cannot be any harmony. So we don't say that. We say Krishna consciousness. But how to bring about Krishna consciousness when there is diversity? Because there are certain persons that are not fit to be in the company of devotees. Lord Chaitanya's instruction is like that. So where do you draw the line? And that this is where social dynamics come into play. How much do you want to go to the unity side and exclude a lot of people? And how much do you want to extend or expand to encompass more people? So what Prabhupada was... There's a little passage in Satsarupa Maharaj's memories of being with Srila Prabhupada. He was describing that Prabhupada was in Vrindavan, and Pancha Dravida Maharaj had the assignment of traveling in South India. So Prabhupada was silently reading his own books in his room in Vrindavan, and Pancha Dravida came. Satsarupa Maharaj describes he was his secretary, and he was in the adjacent room just chanting silently, japa. So Pancha Dravida came, and he describes the conversation where Pancha Dravida was asking Srila Prabhupada, how do I deal with these very strong Mayavad scholars that will argue and argue and argue, and they know the scriptures, and they argue and they argue, and how do I best deal with them? And Prabhupada said three things. He said, don't worry that everyone must become a devotee. That will not be possible. But if you bring one person to Krishna, Krishna will be very pleased. Second thing he said is, if you can somehow learn 30 key verses from Bhagavad Gita, you can defeat everything that the Mayavadis say. He didn't identify what those 30 were, but then the third thing he said was, you emphasize the importance of varnashram in order to make society peaceful. Because it's Vedic, and they know it. Mayavadis know it. Although they may say it's false. I'm a sannyasi. So, that's the net, the inclusive part. What is it? Is it an alarm? Oh, okay. So, to help be more inclusive, there are persons that may not be able to follow the standards of sadhana bhakti. For those persons, the varnashram is particularly important because they can work for Krishna. You know the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says, fix your mind upon me, engage your intelligence always in me. You will live in me always, without a doubt. If you can't do that, follow the regulations of bhakti, sadhana bhakti. If you can't do that, work for me. So this is the work for me. It's the net or the concentric circle going out where Krishna is Daivi Varnashram. Krishna is still in the center. But it's including those persons as part of the, you know, Krishna's in the center program. And it gives them specific duties and responsibilities and ways of cooperating with one another so that there can be tranquility or harmony instead of dissension with that diversity. Then there are some persons that are just unregulated, unprepared to follow anything. And as devotees, Mahaprabhu's told us to avoid that association. They're like, we keep them out. Exclusive. But then there's inclusive. In the beginning of our Hare Krishna movement, we have this term, fringy. Fringe. So, you know, there's in and there's out. And there's, you know, coming towards in but still out. That's on the fringe. We had this term, fringies. And they're not devotees, they're fringies. And to be in means you had to live in the temple. If you didn't live in the temple, there was no sense of, we didn't have the concept of congregation. We had the concept of, you know, you're a devotee. That means you live in the temple. If you're a householder, brahmachari, a kid, it doesn't matter. You live in the temple. If you don't live in the temple, you're a fringy. Didn't say congregation, did you? And then the other was, you know, blooped. Just, you know, and that blooped is the, you know, the sound of a little pebble hitting water. Bloop. Back in the pool of material energy. That was our thinking. In or out. And it was, you know, in a very immature stage, it's necessary, to some degree it's necessary, to have some sharp distinction. between, just like a when you plant a tree or something, you build a fence around it so that animals and so forth and so on, elements, and after some time you can remove the fence because it's strong. But in the beginning you need a nice fence. So, depending upon the maturity of a society or association of devotees, they can be a little more inclusive without losing their identity. And we have to be very conscientious. We have to be very conscientious to not let our teachings become watered down. This is a very different class I'm giving this morning, but there's a sociologist named Burke Rochford, some university in Vermont, in America. And, you know, when he was young, he lived at the L.A. Temple for a while, and something happened, and he left, and he became a fringy. He blooped. He wasn't treated very nicely at some point, and so he went back and completed his studies, and now he's a professor, and he's writing sociology. He's like one of the leading authorities in the field of sociology and the Hare Krishna movement. So he has recently written, just received some email from him in the last 48 hours, with a group of, he's coming out with a new paper, or a mini book, on something related to our movement. And he's making the point that there's this concern of Hinduization of ISKCON. Hinduization of ISKCON, meaning, you know, the core Vaishnava principles and precepts and practices, just due to our interfacing with the public. And, you know, the public influence may be a little stronger than it should be. And it's, you know, some of the practices and so many things, phraseologies, terminology is getting imported within ISKCON. And he, you know, as a sociologist, he's not making a value judgment. He's just saying, to some degree, it seems this is going on. Now, this is on the, you know, are we going to be inclusive or are we going to be exclusive? And how do you work all that out? Because some people think, you know, devotees just, they're too aloof. They don't mix with society, and we're exclusivists. You know, because we're cultivating our Krishna consciousness and we value the purity of our Krishna consciousness. But what's our relationship with persons who aren't devotees? How do we interact with them? Interesting concern. We want, if we're just unfriendly, then we're not going to grow. We're not going to fulfill the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So how do you preserve that while you extend yourself as Lord Chaitanya's mission and not take on another identity or lose the essence of Krishna consciousness? It's a nice subject. An important subject to consider, especially when you're thinking of the welfare beyond your own like immediate little community here. What about the rest of the people? So things have to be done in such a way that our unity is preserved, but we're also accommodating with a little net of other persons that can receive the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. The holy name and prasadam and teachings and so forth. But we maintain our own. And then even within the group, how much conformity is demanded? So what the demigods are saying is they're praying to the Supreme Lord. We have these modes of nature that are influencing us. On the other hand, we know that we are your part and parcel. We're trying to do the service that you've asked of us, but we're not able to cooperate So what, isn't that one of the things that Prabhupada, it is one of the things that Prabhupada emphasized right to his parting days. You all know the phrase. Your love for me will be measured by how much you cooperate with one another after my departure. You've heard this, right? Many times. Your love for me will be measured by how much you cooperate with one another after my departure. And it's not easy. It's Kali Yuga. We have differences. We have personality differences. We have cultural differences. We have, you know, modes of nature differences. All of those things are influenced by the modes of nature. We have our differences. So how are we to stay together? Because there's differences. And some of the differences we're comfortable with, and some of the differences we're not comfortable with. Some of the differences, like, we got strong issues with. And it happens. It's no secret. It happens in any group of people. So how do you preserve that unity while respecting differences? It's the unity principle is we sacrifice for the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We don't like abandon our individuality, but we subordinate our individuality to the Supreme Personality of Godhead's will, that he should be pleased. Or, in the case of Srila Prabhupada, it's loving. But based upon our love for Srila Prabhupada, we will work cooperatively with one another. It says that I'll describe the same principle with a different application. Application is chanting japa attentively. So I know that I should chant japa attentively. It's like Lord Chaitanya, the first two Shikshastakam verses. All the reasons why chanting is so wonderful. But then comes, you know, I don't have any attraction. So what do I do? Knowledge is there, but my attraction isn't there. Or here's another one. Same concept. I'm a devotee that is struggling with my situation, my material conditioning. And I go to the person who is guiding me, and they give me very nice instructions. But, you know, some instructions I apply some of the time, but not very much. Some instructions I apply most of the time, but not all of the time. Some instructions I just ignore. And some instructions I follow really regularly. How can I get more over to that side? Follow the instructions regularly. Or chant japa, chant Krishna's holy name with attention. Or any of the things that will help us advance in spiritual life. So, a principle is the same principle that Prabhupada was describing, the principle of love. I may, because I'm conditioned, there's my little effort trying to overcome my conditioning. And it's not successful all the time. It's a lot of the time not successful. And that's, you know, my state of affairs. Many devotees will describe like that. But then here's another devotee that has a very strong relationship with the person who's guiding them. And the math is really easy. My effort, or my effort plus Krishna's mercy. And how do I get Krishna's mercy through the representatives of Krishna? It's really easy math. So when we have loving relationships, we can sacrifice our stuff for the happiness of the other person. Isn't it? And when we do that, what we really want, not just, you know, the material thing, but what we really want is achieved. We want to love and be loved. More than anything, we want to love and be loved. But we can't let go of our stuff. And so we don't experience loving relationships. We just experience diversity, especially our own. And then, you know, the diversity of others that rub against us and cause me a problem. But the problem is not the diversity. The problem is our lack of Krishna consciousness, or our lack of loving shelter in the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His beloved devotees. We have that. That's the unity principle, while still respecting diversity. It's really wonderful. It's Krishna consciousness. And in this one short verse, the demigods are, the whole section is they're describing their dilemma. They know their situation. Just, summarize it again. We're from you. We're your parts and parcels. Our identity is nothing but yours. That's the unity. We know that. The diversity. There are these modes of nature. And they're acting on us. So we have these different desires and tendencies and natures and stuff going on. So we're not working harmoniously with one another. We're not able to do our service properly. So the petition is not to abandon not to become impersonal. And our prayer isn't, please let me merge with the Supreme Brahman. They're praying to be Krishna conscious. Have that descending mercy come into their life so that they can do their service. They want to do their service. They're sincere devotees. They're demigods. And we're not demigods in one sense. We are devatas, or sura as opposed to asura in another sense. And we have some service to do. And our service requires cooperation. Otherwise we can't do our service. And by that submission or subordinating our stuff, our diversity, not to merge ourselves, but to place our individuality onto the service of Krishna with love, and with love for, we'll say, Srila Prabhupada, our founder Acharya, because we're nourished by his teachings. Whatever person is giving teachings in ISKCON, it's Prabhupada's teachings. We're just presenting it in some way that resonates very well with us, but it's Prabhupada. And that's the unifying principle, because we have so many teachers and so many spiritual masters and so many thises and thats within ISKCON. But we're all under Srila Prabhupada. And if we're not thinking we're under Srila Prabhupada, we're not in ISKCON. We're not giving his teachings. So to subordinate our diversity for the pleasure of our founder Acharya. And that's love. It's very simple. It's simple for the simple. And very difficult for the crooked. When crooked means calculating something. And simple means I want a loving relationship. And here I am. I have my diversity. I have my individuality. I have my whatever, complexities, my impurities. Please accept me in your service. And I wish to become purified. And I'm able to cooperate because I can subordinate my stuff to the interest of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just a couple last things. Prabhupada, in one room conversation, was describing, normally we say unity in diversity. So he was explaining that the teachings of Ramanujacharya, Vishishta Advaita, it's diversity in unity. Huh? I'll do it again. Diversity in unity. So, his philosophy, what does Advaita mean? It means non-dual. That's the unity, non-dual. Vishishta means attributes. So, Ramanujacharya's teaching is that Lord Narayan, the Supreme Person, inherently within him there are various vishishtas, or attributes. And sometimes those attributes are not manifest. Sometimes those attributes are manifest. And then again, sometimes those attributes are withdrawn and not manifest. But the relationship between the attributes and Narayan is a relationship of Advaita. They're non-different from him. Vishishta, Advaita. Diversity within unity. But Lord Chaitanya's teaching is Achintya, Beda Abeda Tattva, where there is diversity and unity. The diversity is real and the unity is real and they're simultaneous. And that's a contradiction. Therefore it's Achintya. So Madhvacharya's teaching is Dvaitavad. Diversity. Because he really didn't like impersonalism, which just says unity. The Lord Chaitanya says unity and diversity. Inconceivably. And he explains how that is so. And that's our unity in diversity principle. And how that applies in our social dynamics, or how we respect. Our goal is not that we become one homogeneous personality. We're not trying to become one with Brahman. There's no variety, no personality, no qualities. That's not our objective. So if we're going to respect there's individuality, personality, varieties, we need to purify them, but the purifying of them is to subordinate them to the personality of Godhead. And therefore, in that way, whatever inebriety or inconsistency or impurity or disharmony, it's removed by the power of the Supreme Pure. Very nice principle. To live it is more challenging than speaking about it. Because there's always something. That causes conflict. If it's causing conflict for the demigods, what's to be expected for us? But it's not, it's a hopeless case. There's a principle to apply. We submit ourselves, our individuality and our everything to our founder Acharya, and we work under him out of love, because we receive the gift of Krishna consciousness, perhaps through the hand of someone, but the hand of someone received the seed from Prabhupada. The best policy, therefore, is to act for the sake of the Lord. That will bring about the desired harmony. Any questions or comments? Yes.
As you said, the devotees try to love the spiritual master and love Krishna and try to be united. But then, this harmony does exist because of the modes of nature. So there could be conflicts which can actually damage either the group of devotees, either due to internal influences or some external influence taking advantage of this. So what is the protection while we are ironing out
disharmonies? Well, first of all, Prabhupada indicated from the outside we cannot be broken. You know, the Aesop's Fables bundle of sticks example. In fact, when attacks come from the outside, it helps strengthen us internally. We need to take shelter of Krishna, we need to cooperate more, we need to do things together that we otherwise weren't doing together. It has that solidifying effect. Although, you know, there's some concern, we have to pay attention to it. The internal things, the specific questions, rephrase it again, how do we...
There could be certain dynamics which develop internally,
yeah,
which can actually damage the community.
Yes. So how do we address them?
What is our protection?
What's our protection?
We are right now not so well equipped at that point of time because we have a lack of love.
Well, it's like the demigods. You turn to Krishna. It will help our Krishna consciousness. But even with that internal. Our individual and collective purity is the protection. But the premise of the question is we're not there yet. We're not so pure. So where's our protection? It's in striving to become pure. Krishna's, it's like a small child. That small child needs protection. So the duty of a parent is to give protection. So if the small child, some danger comes, the child goes to the parent seeking protection. There's a little Prabhupada story. Prabhupada was, it's in the final days, this little drama that Tamal Krishna Maharaj wrote. He was describing how he was so dependent upon his mother. He said, one time he swallowed a watermelon seed. You ever swallow a watermelon seed? He swallowed a watermelon seed and someone said, oh, now a big watermelon tree is going to grow in your stomach. So he went running to his mother and he said, don't worry, I know some mantras and I'll chant those mantras and no watermelon tree will grow in your stomach. And he said, then Prabhupada, in this drama, he said, I was so dependent upon my mother, even when I wanted to go to the potty, I would go and ask her permission and I wouldn't go unless she said, okay. I was so dependent upon my mother and she was so affectionate upon me. So a small child has that affection or sense of seeking protection, naturally their affectionate parents will give the protection. So we may not have the purity, but we have those who are sheltering us that have purity, more so than our own. But they don't want just to forever be, you know, the purity alone. That such persons want that their shishyas become pure, and then they in turn can give shelter to others. Our means, here's another answer, just the holy name is our shelter. When we recognize our limitations, it's not difficult to see our limitations. But especially when you try sincerely and earnestly for pure devotional service, you'll see your limitations. It's like, you know, try to chant attentively, you'll see your limitations. So then it's take shelter of the holy name. That's our protection. I may be lacking in purity, but the holy name is supremely pure. Let me take shelter of the holy name. And we feel protection. I've often thought this thought. I can't even imagine how people who don't chant survive. Because the material world is so harsh. And the only answer I can come up with is their consciousness is so dull they don't even recognize it. Like a tree or, you know, a very covered living entity. But devotees, because of devotional service, their sensitivities are made stronger. And when they become sensitive, this protection comes from the holy name. The process of devotional service itself protects us. And our same as this other, through love, we're protected. Doesn't seem like it, maybe, but it's you know, we're protected. We're protected by that loving relationship. There are things that we just won't do, even if there is like pressure to do, we won't do. Because of loving relationship. And if we're outside of a loving relationship, besides it's very lonely and unhappy, we're minus some very essential protection. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.